Last week we had a discussion about what it means to be the Am Segula, what it means to be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what it means to be the Am HaNivchar. And what we really focused on was anti-Semitism is something that singles us out amongst many others in the world. And we pointed out that really the person who singled us out more than anyone else is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he chose us as his nation, when he said that we are going to be V'yisem L'Segula Mikala Amim. So this is not a new phenomenon. This is actually an age-old phenomenon that we're very proud to hold up high, and we're proud that we are the ones who are connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and along with that comes a tremendous sense of achrayus, of responsibility. And that is really what we spoke about last week. I want to continue the conversation in a little bit of a different form, but it's also along the same theme a little bit, just because I got many emails from people who attend that they wanted to further this discussion just slightly. So we're going to continue, and that is, in 2 weeks we're going to read in Parshas Chukas, a very interesting story that the Torah relates about the grievances of the Jewish people. And they have all kinds of complaints, and they are, for whatever reason, they're dissatisfied with whatever's being provided for them in the Midbar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds by punishing them. And he punishes them by sending nechashim, by sending snakes that bite them, venomous snakes, lethal snakes, that really are dangerous, that are very powerful snakes. And the Torah then says the response is, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe aseh lecha saraf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, make a snake. What do you mean, make a snake? How could he make a snake? Well, obviously it's not going to be a real one, but he says, make a snake, v'samta oso al hanes. I want you to chisel one out of gold and put it onto a big stick. V'hayar kalan ashuch v'ro oso v'chai. Anyone who will look at that snake whenever they get bitten by the real snake will then have the opportunity to be healed. Now, obviously, that was a miraculous story. That was something that's out of the ordinary. It's something that we don't understand today. How is it possible? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a miracle. So what is the Torah teaching us? Why are we learning about this miracle if it's irrelevant to us today? Obviously, every message that the Torah shares is extremely relevant. And I thought perhaps what the Torah means to teach us is sometimes in life we have a complication. Sometimes in life we have an obstacle. And it's something that we have a hard time figuring out how to deal with. And there are many people who just choose to ignore it and choose to just go on with life pretending like it doesn't exist. And we won't deal with it until we have to deal with it. And often that's a very dangerous choice to make, because by that point, there's so much more that goes into the equation that it's almost impossible sometimes to actually confront the issue as it is. And perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us, when you have, in the days of the Torah, when you have the venomous snake that is causing you a problem, that is your obstacle, but we all have that venomous snake in our lives. We all have things that get in our way, things that are problems that we need to deal with. Perhaps what Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us in this pasuk is, you have to confront the issues. Put it out in the open. And sometimes that is the beginning of the healing process. Stare at it in the face. Understand that there is an issue here that needs to be tackled, that needs to be dealt with, that needs to be identified. And perhaps that is the first step in trying to rehabilitate ourselves and trying to get ourselves over whatever obstacle it is that we face. And that is something that I'd very much like to explore today, because I believe it's a very big challenge in our generation, and particularly in the last year or more, that I feel is not being confronted at all, and that is our issues with Emunah. There are many people who have issues with their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and for good reason. It's been a very difficult year, it's been very complicated. It's almost as if we forgot about COVID. We go to weddings today and it's like it never happened. It's an amazing phenomenon. Look how quickly we turn back, and I don't mean that at all as a insensitive comment to those who are still struggling and those communities who are really having difficulty. Just for us here, it's amazing to remember what we were a few months ago and where we are today. It's just unbelievable. And yet, when we thought that we got over that complication, it's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and said, no, you obviously didn't understand that I was communicating with you. And he gave the Jewish people more communication and more communication. And I almost feel as if instead of understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with all of us through the complexities of what went on in our world the last few weeks and the last few months, we almost are happy that we're done with the war in Israel, that we're done with the terrible tragedy in Meron, that we're done with the problem that happened somewhere else, that we're over all those problems and now we're back into the scheme of regular life, and we don't pay attention to the fact that we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the way He communicates with us is by showing us things that go on in the world, and He wants us to hear His messages. Perhaps confronting the issue and talking about what it is that Amunah represents, what it is that Amunah is or should be for all of us in our lives, is the first step to our healing and to our rehabilitation. One of the great Talmidim of the Mezritcha Magid in the end of the 1700s was Rebbe Elimelech Milezhensk. He was one of the great Gedolim in the Hasidisha world. And Rebbe Elimelech Milezhensk was a towering personality who wrote a very important sefer called Noam Elimelech. So it's a sefer that's filled with Hasidus, and it's something that many of you may have not studied before. But the Noam Elimelech is an extremely significant work. And he writes an amazing comment when he talks about Ikvasa de Mashiach. We have a lot of discussion about what's going to happen in the days of the coming of Mashiach. And it's a common refrain that we hear so often when we go through difficulty in our lives, that we say, oh people, we need Mashiach. Somebody's sick, we need Mashiach. We have a tragedy, we need Mashiach. First of all, what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? Anybody know? I don't know. The Rambam says he doesn't know. The Rambam says there are certain things that we won't know exactly what they will be until they happen. And Mashiach is one of them. We don't know exactly what it's going to feel like, what it's going to look like, how it's going to plan out. We know that the Nevi'im have many, many prophecies that make us very excited about the coming of Mashiach. They explain that we're going to have some kind of utopian society, but what does that include? What does it mean? No one's ever going to get sick again? Is that true? I don't know. Is it true that no one's going to have to work anymore? There's no longer going to be any daigas haparnasa? Everyone's just going to have money falling from the trees? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But either way, it's something that we hear about all the time. But the truth is, when you look in the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadiches, that there were many Amoraim that were very afraid, they were terrified of the days leading up to the coming of Mashiach. So much so, there were some Amoraim who said, Yesei velo achmine. That's an Aramaic term which translated into Hebrew means Yavoa Mashiach, I hope Mashiach will come, velo erenu. You know, I don't want to be there when it happens. You don't want to be there when Mashiach comes? How can that be? What do you mean you don't want to be there? We all want to be there. We all want to experience it. What they understood was that what will bring us to the coming of Mashiach, obviously when Mashiach comes, it will be wonderful. But the lead up to the coming of Mashiach is going to be extremely painful and extremely difficult. And that's something that they said, I'm not interested in investing in that part to bring me to the coming of Mashiach. I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take me away before the world has to go through that upheaval as we enter into the era of Mashiach's coming, of Mashiach's revelation. Are we living through that today? I don't know. Were we Yotzei? There were many who said, you know, we were Yotzei that difficulty with the Holocaust already. I don't know. Halavai. Halavai ve'ulai. What a great tragedy. The greatest tragedy that ever befell the Jewish people. But yet, we're almost 80 years later. Mashiach doesn't seem to have come yet. But I don't know. It's our hope that that is something that will be the prelude to the coming of Mashiach. If that wasn't enough, you look what's happened since then, so many difficulties. Maybe that's what it is, and we hope something along the way counts for what the Amoraim describe as the difficulty that leads us to the coming of Mashiach. But the truth is, when the Svarim talk about the coming of Mashiach, they refer to a comment as Chevlei Mashiach. We say it in the Zmiras, Me Chevlei Mashiach Yutzalu Lirvacha. What does it mean when we refer to Chevlei Mashiach? Chevlei Mashiach is really a borrowed term from the Navi Yeshaya. When the Navi Yeshaya describes a woman who is going through the most difficult of pain when she's in labor. So in such a case, the Navi Yeshaya refers to it as a woman who is crying bechaval leha. A woman who is crying in her birthing pains. That's chevel. That's the way it's referred to. Chevlei leida. And from that term, we have a borrowed term, which is now referred to as Chevlei Mashiach. A woman who goes through birthing pains is referred to as Chevlei Leida. The Jewish people who go through this experience of the prelude to Mashiach have that which is referred to as Chevlei Mashiach. Now ask the Noam Elimelech, why do we refer to it as Chevel? What's that all about? Now anybody who knows a little bit of Hebrew knows that Chevel is a rope, a cord, a string. So why do we refer to it as such? And explains the Noam Elimelech so interestingly that perhaps what it means is in the days before Mashiach will come, the Jewish people are going to have a tremendous set of challenges. But the greatest challenge of them all, says the Noam Elimelech, is going to be when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to lower a chevel, so to speak, from heaven. He's going to dangle a cable down to the world. And He's going to expect all of us to hang on tight to that chevel that connects us to Him while He rattles it ferociously. And He's going to see who has the ability to hold on, who has the ability to still remain strong and to still remain connected with all the confusion going on in the world and with all the bias that we read and with all of the different opinions that we find that are antithetical to all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for. The Ribbono Shel Olam will rattle that cable and see how many people are willing and able to hold on strong and remain connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Noam Elimelech writes that our challenge in the days before the coming of Mashiach are going to be a challenge in Inyanei Emuna, more so than anything else. And that's a powerful comment. Chafetz Chaim writes the same thing, that he had a Kabbalah from his Rabbeim, that there is going to be a tremendous challenge in Emuna before the coming of Mashiach. I think we're living through a phase of that rattling of the rope, that rattling of the cable, where the Jewish people are being pushed around and being challenged for good reason to figure out whether or not they are strong enough to hold on and remain connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and believe in Him. And perhaps the Tzav HaShaah for us, perhaps what we need to focus on and pay attention to is to solidify and cement our relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does our commitment to Him mean? What does our loyalty to Him mean in a practical sense? How are we to engage with Him? And what does it mean for all of us when HaKadosh Baruch Hu challenges our emunah? And that's really what I want just to spend the rest of the time this morning focusing on. If we don't get finished, we'll, as always, next week. And we have a lot to talk about. It's an important topic. I think it's always relevant for us, but certainly during these times now. The Navi Yeshaya writes, and we read this on Shabbos Chazon, for the Haftorah of Parshas Devarim, which always falls out before Tisha B'Av. So the Navi Yeshaya writes a very interesting contrast that he draws between an animal and a human being. Now you say animals and human beings shouldn't be in the same sentence, but he's drawing a parallel for a specific reason. And he says, Yada Shar Konehu V'chamar Evuz Ba'alav. He says that it's almost natural, it's instinctive for an animal when they're grazing to find the water source. They know how to find it. They sniff it out. They know exactly where it is. V'chamare v'uzba alav, a donkey when it's grazing, knows instinctively, intuitively, how to find the shepherd. They know how to find the guide. They don't get lost. Even if they wander around, they know. They end up knowing how to find their way back. And he contrasts that to the Jewish people. Yisrael lo yada, ami lo hizbonan. The Jewish people are not that way. What does it mean the Jewish people are not that way? So Rabbi Elia Lapian, one of the great Balei Musar, points out that perhaps what the Navi means is it's natural, it's intuitive, it's instinctive of an animal to know how to find the source of water, to know how to find the lifeline that guides them throughout life. That's the way animals are created. And similarly, writes Rabbi Elia Lapian, it's the way that Jewish people are created. Our instinctive reaction should be that we are a magnet to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As lost as we may be at certain junctures of our lives, there is a way to reconnect, there's a way to come back. And that's just as instinctive. It's the way we were created. It's supposed to be just as instinctive as the animal finding its source of life and its source of water. And he says, unfortunately, the Navi here decries the fact that so often in life we find that that's not the case, that people have a difficult time wandering back and finding their way. We all get lost at some point, and we all get off track. And that's part of the experience of life. But for some reason, he says, we don't have that natural instinctive ability to get back to where we're supposed to be. Why is it so complicated? Why is it so hard for us? to do that. If in fact HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with that magnetic pull, with that ability to pull ourselves back to where we're supposed to be, why do we find it so hard to do that? Why do we feel so often that we're distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm reminded of a beautiful comment that Rav Soloveitchik once made. You look in Tehillim, and it's one of the prakim that we say in Hallel, on Yom Tov and on Rosh Chodesh, Abba Aleinu Letova, this week. So in Hallel we say, Ani amarti bechavzi kol ha'adam kozev. What is kol ha'adam kozev? You translate that into English, it means every man is a liar. Really? The truth is, it used to be a good question. Every man is a liar? Today, yeah, every man is actually a liar. Look in the news and you see every person who gets on any news channel, any news agency, lies. And they don't care. And it doesn't bother them that millions of people are going to see their lie. The next day it's going to be exposed as a lie. Nobody cares. Doesn't matter. Politicians, presidents, whoever it might be, they lie. Everybody for their own good. So it used to be that we lived in a world that wasn't that way. Remember? Before I was born. So there was a world where people were actually upstanding and honest. Like my father says, the Gemara has an assumption that a person would never lie if they know they're going to be caught in a lie. Just who would do such a thing? Doesn't make sense. Who would ever make up a story if they know that the next day somebody's going to come and prove that the story is not correct? The Gemara works off such an assumption. And Rav Soloveitchik said in one of his shiurim, that assumption clearly is not true anymore. Because you can have a president get up on national TV and say, he said this in the Nixon crisis, he said he can get up and say something in front of the entire world that he knows is a lie. He knows that somebody can expose him. And okay, so he'll get exposed and he'll move on. And it's politics and it's fine. So David HaMelech says, Kal ha'adam kozev. Every man is a liar. Now, that's not the world we're supposed to live in. So what does it mean, Kal ha'adam kozev? We do have some kind of natural trust in other people, and we should. We can't really have a functioning society if we don't trust anyone. How are you ever going to have a friend if you never know that you can trust such a person? So we live lives built on trust. So what does it mean, everybody is a liar? The people that we surround ourselves with, we hope are not. We hope are honest people. We hope they're not living double lives. So what does David HaMelech mean? Rav Soloveitchik said perhaps what it means is, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon, the first human being, it says, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es Adam Afar Min HaAdamah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon out of the dust of the Adama. In Hebrew, when you have a prefix of hey, it means something unique, something special. So what do we mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon Afar Min HaAdama? What's this grand Adama that he was created from? What is that a reference to? So the Medrash has two interpretations. Either HaAdama means God created Adam HaRishon from the most sacred ground in the world, which is the Har HaBayis, which is Har HaMoria. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took some of the earth from Har HaBayis, and from that, He created Adam HaRishon. Afar min ha'adama. The other interpretation is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a little bit of ground, a little bit of dirt from the entire cosmos, from the entire world. And He collected all of that dirt, min ha'adama, from the entirety of the world, and He then infused it into Adam HaRishon. That's what created Adam HaRishon. Those are the two suggestions in the Medrash. Rav Soloveitchik said perhaps it's not a disagreement, it's not a dispute. Perhaps both of them are true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of us with a sense of interest, of cosmic interest, of universal interest. The Ribbono Shel Olam put us in the world and He wants us to conquer everything. He wants us to feel connected to all that goes on here. He wants us to be involved in the sciences. He wants us to really figure out what this world is about. And therefore He took Afar Min HaAdama from the whole world and He infused it into all of us. But on top of that, He also took Afar Min HaAdama. He took a little bit of ground from Har HaBayis and He said, this is a major part of your life as well. Being connected to spirituality is a major factor in the lives that you live. Being connected to the Har HaBayis and all that that represents is something that's a natural part of who we are. And Rav Soloveitchik said, we all live this tension. We all have to strike a balance between our cosmic interests, our interest in being part of all that goes on in the world, while at the same time, our other factor, which is afar min ha'adama, to be connected at all times to spirituality, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Har HaBayis, and all that that means for us. And he said, perhaps that's what David HaMelech means, kol ha'adam kozev. It doesn't mean that man is a liar, it means that man is constantly in a state of conflict. I'm always conflicted by this tension that's inside of me. It's the way I was created. On the one hand, I want and I'm interested, and on the other hand, I always want to remain connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and sometimes it's difficult to make that balance. Sometimes it's complicated for us to strike the perfect balance and to really understand where HaKadosh Baruch Hu fits in, where the world fits in, how to put it all together. But that is part of the challenge. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that La'achar Me'ev Esrim Shana, all of us are going to be asked certain questions. It's the questions that none of us are going to want to answer. But we believe that we live in a world of schar va'onesh. We believe in a world where we have to take responsibility for things that we do or do not do. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells all of us from the outset, there's going to be a din v'cheshbon. And the Gemara outlines six different questions that we will be presented. One of those questions is, kavata itim la Torah? Did you make Torah a priority in your life? The question is not, did you learn Torah all day? We're not expected to learn Torah all day. We're expected to live life. Kavata itim la Torah, is Torah a priority in all of our lives? When we make decisions, are they informed based on Torah values, on Torah principles? When we decide where we're going to go this summer, what we're going to do when we go away, whether the hashkacha is something that's reliable in the place where we go away, do we bend the rules or do we not? Are all of those decisions based off of Torah values that are kavua in our lives, that are the constant in all of our lives, that drive the decisions that we make? That's one question. A second question, the Gemara says, asakta bepiri averivya, which is an interesting formulation. It doesn't say, did you have children? Not everybody has the ability to have children. Some people, for whatever reason, can't have children. Either because they were unfortunately unable to get married, they tried, but they were unable to, or because naturally they're just unable to have children. But the Torah does not demand of us to have children. The Torah asks of us, asakta bepiri averivya. Did you try? Did you attempt to bring children into the world? If it didn't work, not your fault. But if you tried, then you can answer the question. Tzipisa li Yeshua. We will all be asked, did we yearn for a redemption? Did we live life in a way that we really believed that someday there would be a geula? There was a boy in YU who asked my father a few weeks ago whether or not, when the war was going on in Israel, he said, you know, I know what's going on, basically, but he wanted to know, should I be following the news every day and really be up on every last aspect and element of what's happening in Israel? So it's an interesting question. Not sure why he needed to ask it to my father. He can decide for himself if he should, but I'm happy he asked him. It's a question I never would have asked my father. Most people would be comfortable asking their parents anything. I'm not, because I know if I ask him this, I'm taking away his time from something that's far more valuable for him to be dealing with than for me to bother him with a question that is not that important. But anyway, I'm happy other people do. So this guy asked him, he wants to know, should he be following the news very carefully of what's going on in Israel? So my father responded right away that he thinks there are three reasons why he needs to. Number one, he said, because even though you're living in America and things are fine, you need to connect with those who are going through tragedy. And it's not the same if you know in theory that something's going on in Israel. You need to know exactly what's going on to really feel the pain of those who are living through it. It's impossible to feel the pain if you don't really know the details of what's happening on the ground. That was reason number one. Reason number two, he said, during an Eis Tzara, we need to have a different kind of tefillah. Our tefillah needs to sound different. It needs to be more sincere, needs to be more genuine, more serious. And there's no way that your tefillah can really change if you don't really have an understanding of what's happening. And the third thing my father told him was, when they're going to announce that Mashiach has arrived, do you not want to be one of the first people to know? How can you not follow the news? Do you want to be left out when that is announced to the world? What amazed me about this response is, number one, that great people have a formulated response to everything because they actually think about everything. They don't just do things. They actually think about everything they do. So when you ask them a question, they have a formulated answer because they've thought about it. But what's even greater is, I told this boy that my father really believes all three of the answers he gave. His tefillah is not the same when there's a war in Israel. It's noticeably different. He sits and he cries when he hears about people who are losing lives or sleeping in shelters or waking up in the middle of the night. He really does. It's not fake. It's real. And primarily, he really believes in the coming of Mashiach. He really does. He really thinks he's going to turn on the news one day when he wakes up in the morning and that's what he's going to hear. He really believes it. He doesn't just say, like some people do, every day after davening, they have a routine. An imam ben munah shleima, this. It's nice, okay, you say it. Some people say it, not everybody. He really believes it. It's funny. There are people in our generation who really believe this. That they're going to wake up one fine day and hear about Mashiach who has actually arrived. And that's a reason that we need to follow. Because you don't want to miss it. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us. Sipisa li Yeshua. I know you said Animamin every day. I know you went to school and this is what they taught you. But do you really believe that there is going to be a redemption? Do you really live life believing that? I look at some of the houses that people are building, I'm amazed. Really amazed. Just walk around our community. Do you really believe Mashiach's coming? What a waste. Chaval. So, the Gemara says, all the Bate Midrashos and Bate Knesios are going to, Asidin, are going to be lifted and come to Eretz Yisrael. I don't know. When we bought our house, I told my wife, we have to make sure that we have Minyanim in here, we have Shiurim in here, maybe our house will come along with us. Otherwise, it's a waste. How are we buying a house? What, are we crazy? I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that I was about to sign off on a piece of property in Chutz Laretz. How am I buying something here? I don't believe that I'm going to be here. And that's what the Gemara says. How seriously do you believe that Mashiach is a reality in your life? If you really believe it, you'll make decisions differently. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects all of us to live life with that real, sincere belief. And I've said. Anyway, back to the question there. The Gemara's first question that it says that we're going to be asked is, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, which is generally understood as, did you go about your affairs in an upstanding manner? Were you a virtuous person? Did people think that you were trustworthy and honest? Did you do your business dealings with emuna, with good faith? But the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, writes that perhaps what it means, nasata v'nasata be'emuna, means, did you delve into the issues of emuna in your life? That's the first question we're going to be asked. It's the most fundamental question that every Jew needs to ask themselves. Did you ever grapple with the issues of emuna? Did you ever think about what emuna means in all of our lives? Did you think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yes, we daven, and yes, we keep Shabbos. Did you ever take a step back and think about who are we davening to? Why do we keep Shabbos? I think about it all the time, and my kids come home from school, and they're in terrific yeshivas, and they love it, and they're happy, and they're learning. But I always wonder, you know, so often they're taught things, but they're not taught that the Ribono Shel Olam is behind everything. It's like God is not in the equation. How can that be? I'm not condemning anybody. I'm noticing. It's the way I was raised also in school. They teach you Chumash and Mishnayos and Gemara and Tanakh and all different things, all different subjects. But rarely do they tell you it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gave us the Torah. It's the Ribono Shel Olam whose Torah we are studying. That's the most important aspect of everything we do. And the Baal HaTanya writes, it's the first question we need to ask ourselves. Nasata v'nasata be'amuna. Did you grapple with issues of emunah in your life? Did you ever take a step back on a Shabbos and ask, why am I keeping Shabbos? Why is it that I follow that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs me to do? It's because I believe in Him. And what does believing in Him mean? And that, writes the Baal HaTanya, is a question all of us need to ask. You know, there's a fascinating discussion in the Gemara Maseches Makos. If any of us would be asked to do this job, I think we would all have great difficulty doing so. But the Gemara says there were many great leaders of the Jewish people who looked at the Torah and said, you know, there are 613 mitzvahs, it's very overwhelming, hard to keep all of them in mind at all times. You know, let me boil it down. Let me try to get just a brief synopsis of what the Torah represents and what it's all about. So the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu comes, 613 mitzvahs. You know, that's a lot. It's a big load. Comes along David HaMelech and he says, you know, I'm going to condense it. Chalila doesn't mean he got rid of mitzvahs. It just means he took what he believed were the most fundamental aspects of the 613 and he presented them that way. And the Gemara says he came up with a list of 11. Then the Gemara says, time went on. Yeshayahu Hanavi said, you know, we have to condense it again. People, ADD, they can't pay attention. 11 things is too much to keep in mind. So let's condense it again. And how many did he come up with? 6. Ba Yeshaya v'hamidin al sheish. And he said, you want to know the foundation of Torah? It's not 613. It's all rooted on 6 mitzvahs. What are those 6? Not important. But then the Gemara says, Micha Hanavi came along, and he once again breaks it down, and he says, really, if you want to know what it's about, it's on 3. 3 mitzvahs. Finally, comes along Habakkuk. The story of Habakkuk is very interesting. I'm sure, myself included, we have never studied the Sefer of Habakkuk, so we know very little about him. But we shouldn't feel bad. We should feel bad that we don't know Tanakh, it's true. We shouldn't feel bad about the fact that we know very little about him, because the Ibn Ezra, in the introduction to Sefer Habakkuk, writes, Hanavi hazeh lo yadanu doro velo mishpachto. We don't know anything about him. We don't know where he came from. We don't know his origins. We don't know which generation he lived in. So the Ibn Ezra, one of the Rishonim, also didn't know anything about Habakkuk. So don't feel terrible. The Ibn Ezra knew all the psukim in Habakkuk, but he didn't really know the origins. But the story of Habakkuk is very interesting, because Habakkuk went through his own journey of difficulty with Emunah. And in the Sefer Habakkuk, the Navi, it's almost, you would read it and you would say, it's kfira. How can somebody talk that way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Navi Habakkuk goes through his own journey of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he has very serious claims against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he asks, I don't understand how you can be doing the things that I'm seeing unfolding in our world. And he says, how is it that you're quiet? Lama tabit bogdim, tacharish bebela reshat tzadik mimenu. How are you remaining silent when evil people in the world are destroying the lives of those who are righteous? Look around the world and you have the same question today. Evil people, terrorists are taking over every community all over the world, extremism. How can it be? How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow that? You created this world. You created all these people. How do you allow them to do this? Wreak havoc in every community all over the place. We live in terror. We live in fear. How can that be? I sat at a wedding last night with a rabbi in the West Side, and we were talking, and he was telling me that he's afraid for his children to walk outside home from school anymore. His children go to Manhattan Day School. He told me they live a few blocks away. He's afraid for them to walk outside by themselves. His 12-year-old doesn't walk home from school alone anymore. He told me his 12-year-old is the only one in his class who still wears a yarmulke outside when he walks home from school with someone. You ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu the same question that Habakkuk, Lama Tabit Bogdim, you allow Manhattan? It's not a third world country. We've all been to the streets of Manhattan. You allow insanity to take over a sane world? You allow everybody who's trying to live a righteous and upstanding life to be terrorized by some extremists who are just out of control and looking to cause harm and hate to others? Habakkuk says very serious claims against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's in the first chapter. The second parak, he says, Vaya'aneni Hashem vayomar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that he needed to respond to the claims of Habakkuk, and they are recorded in the psukim. Vaya'aneni Hashem vayomar, God responded to me, Ksav chazon ubar al aluchos leman yarutz korebo. Im yismamea chakelo. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him a whole long answer to this very simple question. And in the end, He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him the following, V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. I understand, Habakkuk, that you have questions in your life, and guess what? So does every single living Jew in the world have questions in their life. Because life is complicated. And we don't understand the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nor will we ever understand it. It seems so arbitrary and almost so unfair. And Habakkuk, you're right for having questions, but the answer I can give you is, V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. If you want to know how to make it through all of this, it's just to have an understanding of what emuna means, of what your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. And Habakkuk, as recorded in the Gemara, tells us, Ba Habakkuk ve'hemida nalachas. He said, you want the conclusion. What is the condensed version of all the 613 mitzvahs? What are they all about? What is the foundational principle that guides everything? It's that line, V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. Everything else is details. What you need to know most importantly is V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. Why? Because the Ramban writes in his commentary on Shir HaShirim, Mitzvah Rishona, Mitzvah Saseh, Shechayev Adam Lidrosh, Velaser Ulachapes. The Ramban writes, the first mitzvah that we are instructed in the Torah is, Lidrosh, Velaser Ulachapes, to be on a quest, to be on a search, to seek out and to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ulachakiras Elokuso, Veladaso, so to come to an understanding of what does it mean to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in life. What does it mean to live a life that's connected to Him? And that, says the Ramban, is our job. Why? Ki hayidia, because knowing and appreciating that relationship is yisod v'shoresh l'chol davar. Writes the Ramban, that is the foundation to everything. Without that, we have nothing at all. Explains the Ramban, im ein hayidia. If you don't have an understanding, if you don't have that belief, if you don't have that vision, lo yitachein shum davar me'avoda, then nothing is meaningful. Why would you do anything in life with regard to a life of Torah and mitzvos if you don't even have an understanding to whom you're doing it for or why it is that you're doing it? Says the Ramban, that's what it means, that this is the most fundamental principle, v'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. The Ramban then adds, there's a halacha that when a Kohen offers a karban in the Beis HaMikdash, he has to know, l'shem mi maktir. He has to clearly state, I'm offering this karban to the Ribono Shel Olam. He has to say it before he offers the karban. The Ramban says, before we engage in any mitzvah, before we do anything, we have to remind ourselves, why are we doing this? What is the purpose of this mitzvah? Not, what am I getting out of it? That's not the answer. Just last week, I was invited to somebody's home to do the unusual mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. So, it's an unusual mitzvah. It's a great schus. And I brought some of my children along. They were a little bit nervous. So was I, to be honest. But the people whose home it was kept asking me, what's the point of the mitzvah? It's strange. Meaning, there's a bird, a mother bird sitting on top of a nest. And then you shoo the mother bird away, you take the eggs, and then what? Like it's almost anticlimactic. It's not so exciting. Now what do? We make a party? So, it happens to be, the Torah says you should take those and then eat them. Now, we don't do that, right? Maybe you do. I wasn't prepared to do that. So what do we do? So if you would do that, you would make, I guess, a big suda with these eggs. I don't know, not sure. But short of that, they were asking, what is it? The answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do it. That's the answer. And if that doesn't satisfy you, I don't have much more to say. There are many mitzvahs in the Torah that I don't have a full understanding of, that I don't really have a reason for why the Ribono Shel Olam instructed us to do it. But we do it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked us to do it. And that, writes the Ramban, if you don't know that, as you perform a mitzvah, then of what value is the mitzvah itself? It's almost as if a kohen shows up to the Beis HaMikdash one day, starts slaughtering animals, and doesn't even realize that he's in the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't even realize that there's a purpose to what it is that he's doing. So that, writes the Ramban, is the reason why Habakkuk tells us that the most important thing for all of us to know is Vitzadik Be'emunaso Yichyeh. Because that really is the prelude to everything that we do, to all of our engagement, to all of our mitzvah observance, and to a life living connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, I prepared a lot more than I'm saying, so that's why I'm flipping a lot of pages here. I think that people are often mistaken in the way that they understand or misunderstand or define the term of what the concept of emunah means. Rav Shimshon Pinkus, one of the great Balei Machshava, helped me understand. That was not a condemnation on anyone. I also have difficulty understanding what emunah really means. And after I read this from Rav Shimshon Pinkus, it really gave me a better understanding in very practical terms. He gives an example about somebody he calls Reuven, who lends money to his friend Shimon. And they've been friends for many, many years. Their families grew up together. They're in business together. Whatever it is, they have a long-standing relationship. And now Shimon needs money because he has to make a mortgage payment. He doesn't have enough to pay. Whatever it might be, there's some kind of shortfall. He asks his closest friend to lend him some money. And his friend says, of course I'll give you the money. I trust you. Somebody turns back to Reuven and he says, how did you lend Shimon the money? What assurance do you have that he's going to pay you back? To which he says, yes, it's true that right now he doesn't have money to pay me back, and that's why he needed to borrow, but I trust him. I have emunah. Ani mamin. I believe that at some point he's going to make good on that which he borrowed. After all, I've trusted him with so many other things in my life, and he's trusted me. So I have no reason to assume otherwise. That is stepping into the unknown. You don't know that it's going to work out. It's taking a risk. But suppose we go outside and I turn to somebody next to me and I say, I believe that the sky is blue. That would be the wrong term to use. You don't believe that the sky is blue. You know that the sky is blue. If I would turn to any of you and say, I believe that now it's 10:20 in the morning on a Tuesday. That's not the right usage. It's not, I believe that it's Tuesday morning. I know that it's Tuesday morning. And if Shimshon Pinkus frames it in that way, when we talk about emunah, we have to identify what it is that we're referring to. Emunah is not the things in our lives that are definite, that are obvious, that are so pronounced. When I lend money to somebody, that is saying, I believe that the person is going to pay me back. I don't know, but I'm taking a risk. I believe that because of my relationship with them, something good will happen in the end. When I have something that is so clear, that is so evident to anybody, I don't have to say that I believe in that. And he explains that that is an often made mistake when we talk about issues of emunah. People say, if God really exists, if God's really in my life, I have a hard time really believing because I don't see it. It's not provable. It's not this. It's not that. Exactly. That's why it's called emunah. It's called belief because emunah begins at the point where things are a little bit unclear to me. That's exactly where the challenge of emunah starts. Everything that comes before that is not a belief. That's a fact. The fact that we live in a world is a fact. The fact that many other things happen in our world are facts. Everything beyond that, yes, is emunah. And it's not provable. But that's exactly the challenge of emunah. That's what we mean when we say that we all have to work on this issue of emunah, because for many of us, that presents a tremendous challenge. And one of the reasons why I find it so difficult when we deal with issues of emunah is because we're dealing with an entity, we're dealing with a God who is described by the Navi Yeshaya as a Kel Mistater. The Ribono Shel Olam remains healed, it remains concealed and hidden in the world. My father says, he so often hides himself so well that we don't even realize that he's hiding. That's what we spoke about last week. We don't even know to look for him. The story is told that the Baal Shem Tov was once talking to some of his grandchildren, I think. I don't know, did he have grandchildren? I assume. Maybe. If not, it was somebody else that they were once playing, and one of the kids came in from all the games that they were doing outside, and he started crying to his grandfather. He said, "What's the problem?" He said, "We were playing hide and go seek, and I was hiding, and I had such a good hiding spot. Nobody found me, so they just stopped the game." And he said, "That's not fair. The game was, if somebody has a good hiding spot, you have to look for them until you find them." So his grandfather said, "Now you understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels. The Ribono Shel Olam hides from us, and we try to find him. And then at some point we give up. We can't find him, so the game is over. What do you think the Ribono Shel Olam feels? How do you give up in the middle of the game? That's not fair. You came into this world, you signed up to a life that's connected to Torah and mitzvahs, and more fundamentally to God himself, and you gave up? Why'd you give up? Because you couldn't find him? But we're in the middle of a relationship. You can't just walk away." The Ribono Shel Olam is portrayed as a Kel Mistater. There were blessed generations who had very unusual experiences where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in their lives was absolute and very transparent. There are times in all of our lives when we feel the Ribono Shel Olam is so clearly obvious to us. Everybody has moments like that. But that's not the day-to-day life that we live. That's not the experience that most of us feel in the lives that we experience. The Medrash tells us that when Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, Masharas Hashivcha Alayam, Elora Yecheskel Ben Buzi Binevuaso, that which the simplest person at the Yamsuf was able to experience was greater, more profound, a connection with God than Yecheskel, the greatest of the Nevi'im. So there were generations like that. We daven for it every Shabbos. Higala na ufros chavivi alai. We ask God, reveal yourself. It's too hard. How long can you expect us to be in this relationship where we just don't know anymore? Are we supposed to keep looking? Are we supposed to keep searching? I give up. The Baal Shem Tov's grandson, you just give up at a certain point. And look how many people have, Rachmana Litzlan, given up. We can't blame them. Life is complicated. Life is difficult. Chevle Mashiach. Look how many people have let go from that cable, because they were unable to hold on, because the Ribono Shel Olam is rattling them, or rattling all of us. But that's what we ask, Higala na ufros chavivi alai, reveal yourself, and once again give us the opportunity to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence clearly in all of our lives. So you ask yourself, you know, the Navi Yecheskel describes in his generation, we're learning a lot of Navi today, little snippets along the way, it's just a survey of a preview of a lot of Navi that there is to learn. But the Navi Yecheskel says in a number of places that there were members of his generation who were so convinced that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here, and they said, "Azav Hashem es ha'aretz." It's clear to us that God has just given up on the world. He's not here anymore. Doesn't make sense. We tried to find him. He seems not to be involved. He allows the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. He allows Yerushalayim to be in ruins. Forget it. It means, "Azav Hashem es ha'aretz," and therefore we're free now to do whatever we want. There's no more din v'cheshbon. There's no more accountability. I have nothing to be afraid of. God has left his world. He's abandoned. He's jumped ship. Let's live life the way we want to live. That's what Yecheskel describes of Jews in his generation. So you ask yourself, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu configure it in this strange way? It's so challenging. Why would he do that? Wouldn't it be better if the Ribono Shel Olam's presence was so clear and obvious to all of us? Why does he have to be so obscure all the time? So much so to the point that we forget that he's here in the first place. Why do we have that kind of setup? And the Baal HaTanya writes, perhaps the reason why is because, you know, to fully appreciate this, there was an article actually written in the middle of COVID about long-distance relationships. There were a lot of relationships that over COVID had to become long distance. Even couples had to be separated for long periods of time. And the question was, what did that do for their relationships? Did it destroy them? Or did it make them feel a greater passion and a greater excitement for what the relationship represents? Did it give them a new found sense of appreciation? And I found that scientific study very fascinating because I think it's very relevant. We're all familiar with the laws of Taharas HaMishpacha. There's a reason why they were instituted. Because writes the Baal HaTanya, the Ribono Shel Olam wanted to set up a system where we are always going to have a sense of yearning, of passion, of longing, of desire, of excitement to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to expose Him in our lives at different junctures of life. Are we always going to be successful in doing that? No. But that's part of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it this way, because if we would be overwhelmed with a sense of the Ribono Shel Olam's presence in every moment of our lives, we wouldn't appreciate what that meant. We wouldn't even understand how blessed we are to have it. And therefore, writes the Baal HaTanya, in order to make that relationship more profound and more deep, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to set it up in such a way where there is a little bit of distance. For any of you who have sent children to Israel for the year, I'm sure you know that sometimes there are aspects of our children that we appreciate even more when there's a little bit of a distance. When they were going through high school, we may not have appreciated every decision that they made or everything that they do. And potentially when there's a little bit of distance and we don't see them as often and we're not in the day-to-day and they're a little bit more mature and on their own, sometimes it gives us the opportunity to appreciate different aspects of who they are and who they're becoming that we were unable to appreciate when they may have been in our home every single day. And that, writes the Baal HaTanya, is really the intent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in setting it up and structuring it in this way. Emuna, as we said, is an issue that needs to be confronted. It's an issue that many, many people struggle with. And don't feel bad if you're one of those people. I also am one of those people. And it's normal, it's natural to struggle with issues of Emuna. You look around the world, how can you not struggle with issues of Emuna? And yet, that doesn't give us license to say, like the Navi Yechezkel, Azav Hashem es Haaretz. It doesn't give us license to conclude that it must be HaKadosh Baruch Hu has abandoned the world and hide and go seek is over. That's not the conclusion. The conclusion is sometimes we may have to just look harder. We may have to think more deeply. Vitzadik be'emunaso yichya is the most fundamental principle that all of our Torah and mitzvos is based upon. It's all predicated on that. And that's what we live for. That's what the Ramban says. Without that foundational principle, why is it that any of us do anything? Why is it that we follow anything that we find in the Torah and mitzvos? There's no meaning to it. There's no purpose. But that's the opportunity that we have to put it out in the open, to think about the issues, to try to understand where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our lives, where He's lacking, where we have the opportunity to usher Him in more and to try to discover His presence just a little bit more than we already do, and to gain that appreciation for what it means to live a life connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times, to make decisions that are based on that reality, to have she'ifot, to have visions for our lives that are based on that understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, of what will make the Ribono Shel Olam proud, what will give Him nachas ruach, and to have that opportunity to confront these issues in a real way, in a sincere way, and to come to wonderful conclusions. But again, like Rav Pinkus said, there's a difference between that which we know in life and that which we believe in life. That which we believe is something that we obviously don't know. So if you have questions with belief, that's exactly what belief is all about. It's not something to feel bad about. That's what emunah means. Anything short of that is yidia, is something that we know. That which we know we don't have to believe in. We know it for a fact. So this is just a little bit of a continuation from last week. Amir Tashem, next week we will